Well, we are officially 7 days into summer, and I'm exhausted. But it's okay, because we've got my family and I, we've got a vacation coming up. I'm really excited. We're going to get some good R&R, because we are, my wife and I, we're taking the kids, and we're going to go to Disney World. So we're going to get a lot of rest. The Sunday I come back is going to be weird for everybody. I'm just going to be like barely hanging on, but it's going to be great. It is funny because summer, like, we think of summer as this time that's supposed to be relaxing. We think of summer as this time that's supposed to be like reinvigorating. But most of the time we end up just like jam packing our schedules with a bunch of stuff to do because we want to take advantage of like, well, the weather's a little bit nicer. The schedules are a little bit more free. And it really does beg the question, like, what is it that is going to be the thing that truly can actually give us any level of nourishment? What is the thing that can give us any level of sustenance? And it's funny because we are going to talk about that a little bit here today as we're starting our summer series. See, what we're doing for the summer is we are starting a series on the book of Psalms. We're calling it Psalms, Jesus's prayer book. And the reason for that is because the Psalms were these various writings that were put together by like at least six or seven different authors over the course of like hundreds to potentially 1,000 years. But they, after they were compiled, they ended up becoming this thing that the Jewish population deeply understood and deeply lived out in their day-to-day lives. They were the very things that they would pray. They were the very things that they themselves would lean on in times of grief or in times of joy or in times of celebration or in times of doubt. They knew these Psalms like the back of their own hand, and they would go back to them over and over and over. And so when we think about the fact that Jesus came to this earth, and we think about the fact that Jesus took on human form, that he himself would go to God in prayer, it stands to reason that he himself would have leaned on these very same Psalms in the way that the entire Jewish population did. And so we thought, okay, so for the summer, if we know that this is something about who Jesus is, then what if we were to able to do a series where we know us, we're all in and out over the summer. What if we were able to do a series where each week is able to stand alone and we can look at just a unique portion of scripture? Great. Let's look at the Psalms and let's spend a week on each of the Psalms. How many can there possibly be? Turns out 150. We're going to skip a couple here and there. But today, we were like, all right, well, where do we start in the book of the Psalms? And not the book of the Psalms. In the book of Psalms, where do we start? And like Julie Andrews would always say, you should start at the very beginning, right? Because it's a very good place to start. Thank you. See, this one's, I love it. This is good. I like back and forth. So we're going to look at Psalm 1. But here's what's interesting about Psalm 1. See, like I said earlier, all the Psalms, they were not written by one person. Most were written by King David, but like they weren't all written by a singular voice. And so over time, people compiled all of them and they tried to group them together. In some places, like they grouped them based upon the writer. In some places, in other sections, they would group together various psalms that were all on kind of like the same topic or the same vibe. But there are two that kind of live outside of those groupings, and that's Psalm 1 and that's Psalm 2. And we're going to see why here in a second. See, here is what Psalm 1 says. It says, blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked or stand in the way that sinners take or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord and who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. Not so for the wicked. They are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked leads to destruction. This is the entirety of Psalm 1. And what you notice there is that it ends up feeling like it's this generic overview of what it means to be faithful. That the calling on us is to not walk in the way of a sinner, but to plant ourselves by a river, to plant ourselves next to the source of life itself. And it's interesting because when we think about that, we think about like, all right, what are the sources that we take in for our own nourishment? What are the things that we take in to try to fill our cup, so to speak? And I know the Sunday school answer is like, our cup is filled when we come to church. And like, yes, that's true. But like for most of us, if we're really being honest, we fill our cup with a lot of other things. Like we'll fill it with work. Because we love that feeling we get when we finish a project. We love that feeling that we get when we get that praise from a client. We close the deal. We'll try to nourish ourselves through the accomplishments of our kids. Feels good when our kids are successful. Feels good when we feel like we put our kids in a place to be successful. And we kind of hang our hat on that. That can fill us up. We'll hang our hat on just bluntly doom scrolling on Instagram. And there's this algorithm that'll just feed us everything that feels good in the moment, right? That just tells, like, we know that you like this thing, so let's give you more videos of this. And next thing you know, like, half an hour has passed. You haven't actually done anything. It feels nourishing in that moment. The reality is, though, the struggle with all of those things is, like, all of those are fleeting. Like, just as much as we can make a kid feel like we're setting a kid up for success, they can also not have a great day that day. Just as much as we can feel like, if we make this client happy, that'll make us feel great, but we can also just as easily upset that client. We can find videos that make us feel good just as easily as, like, we can find videos that make us not feel great. And it's funny because when you think about nourishment, like you think about honestly in terms of like food, like we all know that like all the food that you eat, it has calories. It's going to give you the thing that you need for your body to like function in that way. But we all know there's a different level of nourishment you get from like pizza and like, you know, like grilled chicken, right? And like one of those is awesome, but like it's probably not what we should always be eating. The reality is, it's a conversation for us to think about how do we actually take in nourishment? And this is why I think the tree analogy is so helpful, all right? And you should know that, like, I decided to just research a bunch of trees, so I became an expert on trees. I'm quite the arbologist, which isn't actually the study of trees, but I forgot what that was called, so it's fine. I studied a lot about, like, what does it mean for roots to take hold? And turns out roots are really all based upon the source of water that you give a plant. All right, so here's the deal. Like, if you have a plant and you put just a little bit of water, you barely, like, sprinkle water on the ground, the plant will get that water. But what it's going to do is instead of allowing its roots to grow deep, it's actually just going to spread its roots out very, very thin over the top of the soil. So it has no stability. It has no strength. Because you're training that root system that all the water is going to come at the top. But what if you water it really, really deeply, but you just water it like all the time? Well, the same thing actually ends up happening where you train roots to go deep, but you actually end up making them brittle because the roots don't ever actually have to be the ones that go deep, never have to be the ones that truly have to make any level of effort to bring in any of the moisture that's in the soil. So while you're getting deeper roots, you're actually creating a brittle plant. But the secret, if you're trying to get like a plant to grow, The secret is that you have to completely drench the soil at the right level of frequency. So when you do it on an infrequent enough basis, what ends up happening is the roots start growing really, 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 really deep because soil obviously is going to dry from top to bottom because that's how things work. And as the roots continue to look for water, they have to go deeper and deeper to where the moisture ends up being. And this is why the idea of a plant or a tree planted next to a river is the strongest possible tree, because it no longer becomes dependent on any external source, on any human watering it or any rainfall. It ends up becoming stronger as a result of the source that it is right next to, because what it's going to end up doing is it's going to draw all these roots so deep into the ground where it's just taking moisture in from the river itself. And so the question for you and I is to think about, well, what sort of roots are we actually growing? And the real question for us actually is, well, what's the other thing that roots are supposed to do? Is they're supposed to provide stability. And so the question for you and me is, how stable do we think we really are? So here's what I mean. The world is designed to pull us this way and that way. The world is designed to work beautifully with any sort of plant that has these roots that are very spread out, very surface level, or where they're really brittle and we can easily pluck them out. Where we can be tossed from this way to that way. Where when somebody tells us you need to believe this, or somebody tells us you need to think this, or somebody tells us you need to do this, we just run along with it. The world is designed for this. It's funny because we were having this kind of conversation as we were planning out this sermon series, and we were talking about this concept when it came to this series and when it came to this sermon in particular, and everybody was throwing out like, oh, you know, different philosophical terms or different theologians and their teachings or these different liturgies of the past. And as we were in there, and I was like, hey, I just want to make sure that we get on record. There's this really good Captain America quote that I think is like really relevant to what we're talking about that day and really matched the vibe of everybody else in the room. But there is this really amazing Captain America quote that takes place in this one comic, and that we're going to get a little bit nerdy here. If this your first time, this is kind of who I am. In this, there was this moment in comics where the government decided, like, oh, we want to have all this oversight over superheroes. And half the superheroes were like, yeah, we need to have oversight because we're causing harm and good at the same time. And the other half was like, no, like, we don't want to get permission from anybody to have to go help somebody. And what ends up happening is you have Spider-Man, who ends up like feeling like he's caught in the middle. And he decides to go with the side that wants oversight, and then he immediately regrets his decision, and he goes to Captain America, who's leading up the side that is like, no, we want to just be able to help people. And there's this really beautiful moment where he looks at him and goes, the entire world is against you. The entire court of public opinion is telling you that you're wrong. Every politician is telling you that you're wrong. Your peers are telling you that you are wrong. Everybody is telling you that you're wrong. How is it that you have so much conviction and confidence in who you are? And he gives this brilliant, beautiful moment where he looks at him and he goes, it doesn't matter what the mob say. It doesn't matter what the world says. It doesn't matter what the press or politicians say. It doesn't matter if the entire world tells you that something that is wrong is now right. If the mob or the press or the world or the people around you begin to tell you that you have to move, your job is to plant yourself like a tree next to the river of truth and to tell them no, you move. When we actually allow our roots to take hold in the way that they're supposed to, we have the capacity to look at a world that is constantly asking us to move and shift and change and to say, no, you can move. The question is how we do this. How is it that you actually plant yourself? How is it that you allow yourself to begin to grow roots? Because we all like that idea. Like, we like that idea of trying to be somebody with that much conviction. We love the idea of being somebody with that much confidence in our belief structure. But how do you do it? How do you get there? And the reality is that Jesus himself gave us this answer. It's this moment in John 15 that actually inspired one of the songs we sang earlier today that says this. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me and you are like a branch that is thrown away and withered, such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. But if you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. The way we take root is we begin to understand that we were never the ones who needed to take root in the first place. I'm the vine and you are the branches. You know what a branch's job is to do in terms of an entire like tree or plant system? The branch's job is to make fruit. The branch's job is not to be the one that grows the roots. The branch's job is not to be the one that provides sustenance or nutrients to itself or to anybody else. The branch's job is simply there to be connected to the vine, connected to the tree, and to produce fruit. And so when Jesus looks at us and says, I'm the vine, you're the branches, he's making this promise to us where he says, listen, I'll be the one planted for you. I'll be the one that will bring in the nutrients and the things that you need. I'll be the one that gives it to you. The only thing that you need to do is to then go out and do the thing that I've called you to do, which is to be a disciple. Where when the world is telling us that we have to move, we get the joy of being able to say, like, I'm attached to somebody that won't. But here's the difficult thing of this, right? The difficult part of this conversation is, how is it that we attach ourselves to Jesus? Like, I love this idea, right? Like, oh, great, I don't have to be the one that's growing the roots. Like, Jesus is going to do it, but I feel like I'm already kind of like a full-fledged person. I feel like I've already grown. So how is it that all of a sudden I'm supposed to, like, be a part of this vine that I don't ever feel like I've been a part of? I've become a part of this vine that I feel like I actually broke myself off of earlier. How is it that I'm supposed to join back into the thing that's going to give me the nutrients in the life that I so desperately need? And this is where the continuation of the conversation ends up happening. So because as much as Jesus took the words of Psalms and he gave this lesson, then what we end up is we end up having Paul, who takes the words of Jesus and then begins to expand upon it even further. Where in Romans 11 it says, if some of the branches have been broken off and you, though a wild olive shoot, have been grafted in among the others and now share in the nourishing sap from the olive root, do not consider yourself to be superior to those other branches. If you do, consider this, you do not support the root, but the root supports you. You will then say, branches were broken off so that I could be grafted in. Granted, but they were broken off because of unbelief, and you stand in faith. Do not be arrogant, but tremble. For if God did not spare the natural branches, he will not spare you either. Consider, therefore, the kindness and the sternness of God. Sternness to tell those who fell, but kindness to you, provided that you continue in his kindness. Otherwise, you'll be cut off. And if they do not persist in unbelief, they will be grafted in. For God is able to graft them in again. After all, if you were cut out an olive tree that is wild by nature and contrary to nature were grafted into a cultivated olive tree, how much more readily will these, the natural branches, be grafted to their own olive trees? He takes this entire conversation and takes it to a people who understand deeply what it means for one to grow an olive tree or one to grow anything. And he begins to explain to them what it means to be attached back to the root. And he's giving this explanation to these Romans who wouldn't have grown up in a Jewish faith. And so there's part of them that are thinking, like, how is it that I'm able to be a part of this? And he uses this analogy of, you're going to be grafted onto it. You, these individuals who see themselves as this wild olive shoot, this wild olive branch who's not meant to be a part of this cultivated thing. And Jesus can graft you on. And I love the way that he describes the fact that he's like, listen, it's contrary to nature. It's contrary to nature to have a cultivated olive tree. It's contrary to nature to have one that is pruned and trimmed. Because nature is going to have you go in every which possible direction. But the reality is that once you get grafted onto the one that is pruned, that is trimmed, that is nurtured, that is cultivated and cared for, you end up producing more fruit. You end up producing so much more than you could have ever thought possible. And sometimes it's hard for us, I think, to realize that, because the hardest thing for us to see is sometimes the fruit takes a lot longer to produce than we're willing to admit. Do you know that an olive tree takes decades? It's like 40 years or something like that before it actually produces its first batch of, like, legitimate fruit, legitimate olives? Probably didn't, because we don't grow olives here in Texas, but we do grow pecans. And so, same thing, pecan tree takes like 10 to 15 years to truly have its first good harvest, the first time you can actually use it to do anything with. And so for us, sometimes as we begin that process of being grafted on, we begin to think, well, it's not going fast enough. It's not good enough. When we fail to realize that this thing takes a lot of time. Do you know how you actually graft something on? You split open the tree. You cut it open. And you take the new branch, the branch that's going to be grafted, and you hold them together until eventually, slowly, over time, they intertwine their selves in such a deep and intimate way that they end up becoming one. And so as in Psalm 1, when it's talking about this idea of what it means to not walk in the way of sinners, but to delight in the love of God and the law of the Lord, for us, it's a reminder that what we're being asked to do is not something that's going to happen overnight. Because what we can do overnight, we can just follow the laws of God. We can just comply. But it doesn't say, well, just comply with God. No, it says learn to delight in God. In the original Hebrew there, another phrasing of it would be learn to love the law of God. Learn to love the promises that you've made for the person that you made them for. Honestly, it's like a wedding vow. See, this sermon is one that I have a lot of love and excitement for when I found out we were going to be preaching it, because this here is my wedding band. And by wedding band, I mean this is my second wedding band. I lost the first one like a year ago, but if we're being honest, we should all be really impressed that I kept the first one for like 7 years without losing it, because my Aggie ring I lost in 6 days. So it's pretty impressive. But the reason I love this is because on the day of my wedding, my wife and I stood together in this old oil refining factory down in Deep Ellum. We stood there with Arthur, with all of our friends, with all of our family. And our wedding verse was Psalm 1. Now, the reason it was Psalm 1 is because as we were approaching the day of our wedding, we were like, well, there's 150 Psalms. So what if, as a countdown, we read a psalm every single day in the lead up to our wedding? It's a beautiful and amazing idea. And then we remember that some of them are like 2,500 words long. And so those were like harder days. But we reached the final day of our wedding. Some of them, you're just like, you just read. It's hard. And some of them, though, you get to this opportunity where you see this beautiful moment. It's on the inside of my ring, which is made of both wood and metal, is engraved Psalm 1, 1 through 3. And the beautiful thing about that day is it was this reminder of what we get to do and what we get to be for one another. Because as beautiful as that moment was standing with one another, my favorite moment of that day was we'd finished all the ceremony and all of that. We were taking our portraits together and we just look at each other and we're like, we're both just tired. Can we just sit on the floor? And so we're sitting on the floor of this old factory and we're like, we just want to talk. Because here's the deal, when I think about the vows that I took on that day, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, I can comply with all of those, but what I've learned to do over time is to love those vows. I've learned to love them because I've grown deeper in love with my wife. I've grown deeper in love with my wife because me and her have grown closer and closer together to where we are one, where our lives have been grafted together with one another. But far more importantly, what we have learned over time is not just that me and her are talking to one another, but that we are growing closer to God as well. Because as we grow closer to God, we grow closer to one another. And so when I think about what it means to be grafted to one another, the question is far more, are we doing the things that are going to allow us to grow deeper in love with the thing that we are trying to be grafted to? And the truth of the matter is we can't graft ourselves to our job. We're not meant to graft ourselves to our kid, and Lord knows we have no business grafting ourselves to social media. But when we graft ourselves to the one who actually already has the roots set, we have the opportunity to realize how much easier this process becomes. And so here's my question for you. Here's my question for myself is, are we doing the things this week that allow us to grow deeper in love? Are we talking to God? So we're not looking at God going, God, may we learn to comply with you, but God, may we learn to love and be delighted in what it means to follow your way, to follow your path, and to not stand in the path of the sinner. So the challenge for you, the challenge for me this week is to actually learn to be in conversation with God. And for when those moments come and we're not entirely sure how to do that, may we do what Jesus himself did. May we lean on the very same prayer book that he leaned in on. May we learn to read the Psalms as a way to have this conversation with God so that in our moments of struggle, we can turn to a psalm of grief. In our moments of anger, we can turn to a psalm that cries out. In our moments of celebration and joy, we can turn to a psalm that lifts God's praises on high, and we begin to see how in each of those psalms, we grow closer to the one we're being grafted to. Until one day, we realize how intertwined our lives have become, and that when the world looks at us and tells us to move, we get to look at him and say, well, he's not moving, so I'm good. Will you pray with me? Gracious and loving God, we thank you for coming to this world and being the example of the tree for us. God, may we lean into you, not trying to be the vine ourselves, God, but just simply being the branches that are grafted onto you. God, may we give ourselves the opportunity to do the work and the time necessary for those to become strengthened and whole and intertwined with one another so that we might produce your fruit. God, may you continue to pour into us the sustenance. May you pour into us the thing that might nourish our lives. And God, may that be the very thing that allows us to find life and strength. It's in your holy and blessed name we pray. Amen.